Okay, everybody, we're going to start section. Welcome to the first iOS section. My name is Tommy MacWilliam, and today we'll be covering Objective-C, and we'll take a look at how to design classes and move forward from lecture. So just some announcements. As always, we have the lectures and sections online. The section slides and source code are up on the sections page. You should be getting your end puzzle feedback this week if you haven't already, so do let us know if you have any questions or comments on that project. So today, we're going to take a look at Xcode, its various features, along with GDB and its debugging features. We're going to review the primitive data types really quickly before we get into designing classes and objects. And in doing so, we're going to take a look at some of the foundation collectibles, so things like arrays and dictionaries that we've seen in other languages, and kind of see how Objective-C handles that. And finally, we're going to walk through designing a new class to see how that process is done. So first, remember to download the newest version of Xcode, which is a huge improvement over Xcode 3. It is $5, which really kills me because I hate paying for software. So inside of Xcode, we have it's divided into some different components. In the middle, as you've seen, is where you're going to be doing most of your code editing. Now over to the left, we have a section where we can navigate our project in various ways. So as you can see, this first tab, we can see everything by file. So here I have different folders within my project and the different files therein. If I click on the second button, we can see more of an object method-oriented view of seeing things. So here are all the methods inside of my student class, as well as my instance variables. Over here, we can actually search for something. So if I want to search for init, it's going to search everything in my project pretty quickly, I might add, to find what we're searching for. Next, we can find any issues with our project. So this is a good thing to have blank. Next is going to be some debugging things. If your app crashes, then this is going to have plenty of debug information like a stack trace. You can try to figure out where and why your app crashed. Here's going to be a list of breakpoints, which we'll get into really quickly. And finally, just a list of things you've done with your app. So every build or debug or run will be listed here. So, oh, come on. Okay, so as we saw today, Xcode has some really cool documentation features. So the first thing you want to do after you install Xcode, as it might not come with the documentation files already, is to install them. So to do that, we're going to go into the Preferences menu, then over to this Documentation tab. We can click on Check and Install Now to install the documentation. So if I go up here to Xcode, to Preferences, now we have this Documentation tab. If I click on this Check and Install Now, it's going to download the documentation for the Mac OS X core library. We can also install the iOS library by clicking the button Get that would be here if it weren't already installed. The button will look like this because I haven't installed the legacy library just because I don't really need it. So now, when we want to look up documentation after we've installed it, we can do one of two things. We can click this organizer in the top right, which is going to bring up a search panel. We can search for a method or a class. Or if we want to look up something as we're typing, we can just hold down Option and click on the class or method we want to view the documentation for, and we'll get a little summary with a link to the full documentation. So if you want to pull up the organizer, right here in the top right, if we click that, then you see we have this documentation tab, and we can search for whatever it is we want to see. So in this case, I've pulled up the documentation for the NS dictionary, which we'll be taking a look at later. You can see it has a list of all the methods. You click a method, you'll be brought down to a list of its parameters, and a lot of times even example usages. So that's really handy to have available if you're trying to remember or even look up method names for object or class. So GDB is a tool that was developed with GCC, and it's not specific to Xcode. You may have used it before. But basically, it's a command line way of debugging your code. So to invoke GDB, we can just click on Run, and down the bottom, we'll have a little GDB prompt. We can type in GDB commands. So if we just run the program by default, it's just going to run through, and we're not going to have any way of really debugging it unless it crashes or something. So in order to stop the program so we can see what's going on at a certain point, we're going to insert what's called a breakpoint. So there are two ways of doing this. The first way is the easier way. Inside of our code editor, if we just click on the left side of a line, we can insert a breakpoint. So if I wanted a breakpoint right here, if I just click here, you'll notice this little blue thing next to line 19. And that means I have a breakpoint at that line. So now if I go over here to my breakpoints tab, we now see we have a breakpoint in the main.m file on line 19. To get rid of a breakpoint, I can just click on this and drag it off, and it'll explode, and our breakpoint is now gone. Now from GDB, we can list our breakpoints by typing in info b or just ib if you're really lazy. We can delete breakpoints with the delete keyword, and we're going to give it the number of the breakpoint that we want to delete, which will be spit out by info. We can also insert breakpoints via GDB with this b or break, and we can give it either a method name or a line number. And so that will insert our breakpoint. At a breakpoint, we might want to print out what an object looks like, which we're going to use PO for print object. We can see object, we can see instance variables of that object. Now, once we're at a breakpoint, we obviously want to keep going at some point. So what's really useful about GDB is you can kind of step through your program line by line. So there are two ways of doing this. The first keyword is called next. So basically, if you encounter a function or a method, if you click next, it's just going to execute that function, and you'll be able to access its return value, and you'll keep going within the function you're in. If you want to see how that function executes and you want to go into that function, you're going to use step instead. And then your debugger is going to jump to where that function is, and you can step through that function with either next or step. If you want to continue to either the next breakpoint or the end of your program, you can just type continue, and that's going to go through until it hits something else, so you don't have to keep hitting next as soon as you hit your first breakpoint. Right, so when I say command line, I meant the console built into Xcode. Because it's just it's like a little command prompt, which we'll see later. It says GDB, and you can interact with it as if it were a console. So as we mentioned today, Objective-C is a strict superset of C, just like C++. So any C program is also an Objective-C program. There are two major implementations. We'll be looking at the former. But just as a fun note, Objective-C is not a language that is limited to Mac OS X. There are implementations by the same people who wrote GCC that will allow you to write Objective-C on any platform that GCC runs on. We won't really be taking a look at that, but just know that it exists. So the major data types in Objective-C are the same as C. We have ints, floats, doubles, chars, and we also have this special ID thing. So as we saw, this is kind of like a void pointer. It basically says I can be an object of any type, and I can interact with that object however I want. So strings are like Java. They're not a primitive type. They're actually built they're implemented by the language in a class, this case called NSString, or in Java it was just called string. And as David said in lecture, let's not forget to put that at sign before every string, or the compiler will yell at us. So nslog becomes our new log.i from Android or console.log from mobile JavaScript, and that's going to print out to that console. Not really useful for your end user using your iPhone app, but as you as a developer, that can come in handy. So we mentioned there are different ways of substituting variable names into your string. For ints, we're going to use d, floats, or f. And finally, this %at is for a generic object. So oftentimes for strings, we're going to see this %at. And the at is a nice choice of character because that's what we're preceding those double quotes with. So there are two parts to our class. The first is our interface. So this is going to be in our .h file. So we're going to start this off with at interface, and we're going to give our class a name. We can inherit from something. We've seen so far we can inherit from NS object, and so that's going to go after that colon. Now, inside of your interface, you're going to have all of your instance variables. So it's going to be a type, often a pointer, and then the name of the variable. Underneath that is where you're going to declare all of your methods. In this case, the minus sign is going to be an instance method. You can have a class method with a plus sign. The return type will be inside parentheses, and then the name of your method. Implementation files, on the other hand, these .m things, are where we're actually going to define our class methods. So we're going to start off with at implementation, and then the same class name that corresponds to our .h file. And then we're just going to provide definitions for our methods. The method name has to match something that you've defined in the h file. So we saw how we can give these classes instance variables. And at the end of lecture, we saw we can access them via this arrow. So this is kind of annoying, and sometimes and so this is kind of annoying, right? And so we're going to implement methods that are getters and setters, or accessors and mutators. So we could implement a simple getter to get a property called bar. We could say int bar, and we're just going to return the value. Now we could also implement a mutator or a setter that's going to change the value of this instance variable called bar. So if you have a lot of instance variables inside of your class, this can get really annoying, having to go through and type everything one by one, especially if the getters and setters aren't doing anything useful. So that's where Objective-C 2.0 has this really cool feature called properties. And these basically can generate these getters and setters for you. So the syntax of a property, inside of the interface, you're going to say at property, and then you're going to give this property some attributes, which we're going to take a look at in a moment, and then you're going to give this property a name. So common style is going to be to give your instance variables a name starting with an underscore and your properties that same name without the underscore so that you can distinguish between either your instance variable or your property. Inside of the .m file or the implementation, you're going to want to use this at synthesize, and then you're just going to give it the name. So what's really cool about this is that this is where your getters and setters are going to be generated for you. If you want to override those getters and setters, that's totally fine. You would just define them as you normally would. But if you don't want to take the time to write that a million times, you can just use properties. So once you have properties defined and synthesized, you can access them in a more Java-like syntax with the dot. So if I have an object called foo with a property called bar, I can access that with foo.bar, and I can change its value with, say, foo.bar equals something. So any questions on properties yet? Sure. So just kind of vocabulary, these are called, in Objective-C, you'll often see these called IVARs, or instance variables, and a property is what's going to define the getters and setters we use to get those instance variables. So they're very similar things, but the synthesize kind of adds another layer of abstraction in creating these getters and setters that are going to modify them. So in Java, we often saw things like get view or set view. This is going to be kind of the same deal, where we're going to be getting and setting properties via methods instead of just accessing those properties directly. Those instance variables directly, I should say. Yeah?
What's the difference between an instance method and a class method?
So an instance method is going to require an actual instance of the class. So something like, so let's say you have an array and you want to get the length of an array. So you need an actual array to get the length of. Where a class method is something you're going to be sending to the class. So just like we saw this alloc method, we can't send alloc to an already allocated object. That doesn't really make sense. Instead, we send alloc to the class. So this class method does not require an instantiation or an actual object to send the message to. We're going to send the message to the class and probably get back some object. So we saw this at synthesize, and so yes, that is going to be necessary to actually generate the getters and setters. So without this synthesize, Xcode is actually going to complain to us that we have this property, but it's never synthesized, and so we can't really do anything with it. So right, so we've got to need both this at property and this at synthesize. In this definition, we can give our property some attributes, which we'll look at in a moment, of kind of how values can be assigned, where this synthesize is going to do the generation for us. So yes, they're both mandatory. Your type will only be present in the at property. This at synthesize will just have a name, and that's where we're going to tie a property to, say, an instance variable inside of your class. Okay, so let's take a look at these property attribute things. So these kind of define the behavior of your getters and setters. So iPods, or iPhones, can have multi-threaded applications. So oftentimes in a multi-threaded application, you have to do fancy things with synchronization, with mutexes, that basically slow down the getting and setting of your variable. So if we know that we're not going to be using a variable in a multi-threaded context, we can speed that up by telling the iPhone to not bother with this multi-threading. It's totally fine. Just give me the value. And so to do that, we're going to give a property an attribute of non-atomic, where an atomic access is something that's guaranteed that when one thread accesses it, no other threads can touch it. So don't worry about that too much yet, but just know that having non-atomic, if you only have one thread, is going to make your variable access a lot faster. Now, we can also use read-only and read-write. So if we say read-only, that means only a getter is going to be generated, and we don't want any setter to touch the value of that variable. On the other hand, if we say read-write, which is the default behavior, we're going to get both a getter and a setter when we synthesize our property. So let's look at the different ways of defining methods. So if we just want a regular method, doesn't take any arguments and returns nothing, we can just say the name of our method. We don't need parentheses or anything like we do in a lot of other languages. We can just say void foo, and then we can define our method. Now, if we want our method to take a single argument, we're going to say the name of our method, a colon, then inside the parentheses is going to be the return type, the type of the parameter. So in this case, this method foo takes a single parameter of type int, and it's called bar. Multiple arguments, on the other hand, we're now going to define a keyword for that argument. So in some scripting languages like Python, you'll often see keywords inside of functions. It'll say something like, you know, key equals A inside of a sort function or something. Objective-C is the same way, in that all of our parameters are going to be named. So if we have a parameter called baz, it's going to take a value of quax, which is of type int. So this syntax is a little weird and a little bit to get used to, especially with the asymmetry of the first parameter and the rest of the parameters. But this is going to be the way that we're going to give arguments or parameters to methods in Objective-C. And so we'll see examples of this to make this a little bit clearer. Yep?
In your example, does the first parameter does not have a name?
Yes. So in our first example, the first parameter does not have a name. So that's why we often see methods called init with name. And that with name is kind of tells you what the first parameter is, then everything else after that is named. Sure. So this last example is going to define a method that takes two arguments. And the syntax is definitely weird. It's very unlike other languages. So the first argument is called bar. So this doesn't have a keyword associated with it. As the first argument is just going to have a name. No keyword, just a name. And it's going to come after the name of the method. So the return type is always going to be in parentheses before the actual name of the parameter. So this is just a single parameter that takes int. The second part defines the second parameter for our method. So it's going to be called baz. So when we call this method, we're going to say baz colon, and we're going to give that some value. And then after that is going to be the name of the variable that we can use inside of our method to get at that value. In this case, it's just quax, and again, we have a return type, a type of int. So it's a little easier to make sense of once you see how they're called, which is next. So Objective-C uses this fancy thing called message passing. And this is unlike a lot of languages. So instead of directly calling a method, what Objective-C will do is send a message to some object. Now, when Objective-C sends a message, it has no idea what it's sending a message to. So the object that receives the message may or may not respond to it. So this actually allows us to be really dynamic. So if we want to call a method, we're going to use these square brackets, which we often see for arrays, but now in Objective-C, this is going to be how we're going to call methods on our objects. So first, inside of these square brackets is going to be the object you're passing the message to, or basically the object you're calling the method in. So after that is going to be the method name. So in this case, we could have our method name be something like foo. Now after that is going to be the value of the first argument. So here, this argument could be something like 5 for the case of this foo example. Then we're going to need the key for our second parameter. So in this case, we called that baz. In this case, we're calling it another. And then we can give that a value. We could say an integer here of 5 or something, or just generically just what you want that parameter to be. So syntax, definitely weird. Any questions on that? So why doesn't the first argument need a key? That's just kind of the way the language was designed, maybe because they didn't want an extra colon or something. That's just kind of the way the language was designed, and that's kind of what we'll be working with iPhone apps. There's a lot of strange quirks, or differences, really, in this language than languages you've probably seen before. But that's half the fun. Making money. So when we want to instantiate our classes, it's often a two-step process. So first, we're going to call alloc. And so this is a method that's defined in NS object. It's given to us for free. We don't have to write alloc. And all this is going to do is reserve memory for our object. And so this is really low level. We don't really have to be concerned what's going on. But Objective-C is going to say, we have an object. It's going to need this much memory. Let me have it. So after that, we want to somehow initialize our object. So this is kind of our constructor, like in Java, where we can just say init, and that'll just initialize the object with no parameters, which isn't particularly useful a lot of the time. So we want to define our own custom initializers or constructors in which we can pass values to the object we just initialized. So often the style for this will be a method called initWith, and then it'll be something like name or size. And then you can define a bunch of other parameters to pass to your object using the syntax we just saw. So in both cases, we're going to return pointers to objects. So it's really easy to forget the star next to your variable name, but Objective-C will scream at you if you do that. So just add a star if you see a lot of strange warnings. So any questions on that so far? Okay, so as we mentioned, Objective-C is not garbage collected like Java. So once we're all done with the value and we're not accessing it anymore, we need to explicitly tell the system to, we can garbage collect it, we don't need to keep this around in memory anymore. So Objective-C uses a system called reference counting. So basically, with every object, it has a reference count associated with it. So as soon as that reference count hits zero, the object is going to be garbage collected by calling dealloc, and it's going to be freed from our memory. So when we first alloc an object, it's going to have a reference count of 1, which means it's going to stay in memory because our count is non-zero. We can also send a message retain to an object, and that's going to increment the reference count again. If we send release, the message release to some object, it's going to decrement the count. So often if we alloc an object, we initialize it, it has a reference count of 1. Later, we call release, that decrements the reference count, it's 0, then dealloc is called, and all of that memory is freed. So we'll take a look at how this works, but that's the basic notion of memory management in Objective-C. Yep?
What happens if you try to
reference a variable that's been released? You'll probably crash. However, we'll see that there's a special way to release properties in which we set their value to nil instead of calling release, and that is actually going to decrement the reference count for us. But because we're allowed to send nil messages, our app is not going to crash. So we'll see an example of that, and that's kind of the handy way to do that. But if you're just calling release on things and you try to access them, you're basically going to the equivalent of a seg fault, and you'll get into some trouble. Yep?
Could you repeat again the difference between
Sure. So the difference between dealloc and release. So release is going to change the reference count of an object. So when we say release, it's going to take its reference count and it's going to decrement it. Dealloc, which is never something we should call ourselves, is going to be called automatically whenever the reference count is 0. So that's when the object is going to be removed from memory. So we don't want to remove it from memory ourselves. We want to release it enough times that it's going to be released from memory by the system by calling dealloc. So release is we're going to see a lot of release messages being sent around where we're not ever going to call dealloc directly. Yep?
Do you assume, though, that dealloc is called immediately, or is it kind of waiting for some other thing to cause that to happen?
So is dealloc called immediately? As immediately as possible, because these systems, you know, want to free up as much memory as possible. So it's generally not a worry that, like, oh, I hope dealloc is called soon. The garbage collector will work basically as much as it can, as much as it is able to without slowing down your app, basically. So how can the reference count increase? So you'll notice that both alloc and retain are going to increment the reference count. So as we see an example, a lot of times when we're setting properties, we want to retain the property in case it accidentally gets released somewhere else. So we're not going to allocate an object more than once. Instead, we're going to send a retain message whenever we want to make sure that it's not released because we're still working with it by someone else. Okay. So now we can control the behavior of how things are kind of copied and assigned with some other property attributes. So the default is just a straight assign, and that's just going to say this property has a value of this. Now if we want to automatically retain an object whenever it's set, we could use the property attribute retain. And what this says is that whenever a value is get or set, then a retain message is going to be sent to that object. So if we have an object in, say, our main.m, and let's say it's a string, and we're working with that string, and we accidentally release the string, but still want to work with that string inside of the object. So if we release that, we're now going to crash because we have no more string. If we had set this property to have an attribute of retain, that means a retain message would have been sent to the string, so its referent count wouldn't be zero until the class containing the string was actually deallocated. Now, instead of retaining, sometimes we want to copy the value. So in this case, we're actually going to create a new object with a new reference count, and we're just going to copy all of the properties in the old object into this new one. So we're free to release that string because we have a new copy stored in the object. Yep? So this notion of constructors and destructors in Objective-C. So our constructors are basically this alloc and init, where our destructors are dealloc. So this dealloc is going to be called by the system once the reference count is zero. And so that's when basically everything is going to get freed up. So we won't explicitly see constructors and destructors. This is kind of the Objective-C equivalent with init and dealloc. So when you deallocate an object, is everything deallocated for you? And the answer is no, because you're defining your own dealloc method. So inside of that dealloc method, you want to be sure to release everything, all the properties of that object. So if you haven't defined a dealloc method or you forgot to release some property to an object, it's not going to be garbage collected for you. So when we define our dealloc methods, which we'll take a look at shortly, it's really important to make sure we release all the properties inside of the object. Yep.
Retain is confusing. So when do you know when to use retain?
So when do you know to use retain or copy? We'll actually go over an example of this really shortly. That'll kind of clear things up. But basically, if we want to copy an object and have our own copy of it, that means we can modify the original object. If we just want to reference that original object, so any changes to that original object are also reflected in some object with it as a property, then we'd want to use retain. So hopefully an example will clear that up a little bit, because that sounds really abstract. But there's a subtle difference between the two. So once we define one of our classes, we probably want to use that class in another one of our classes, or even our main.m file. So again, we need to modify both our interface and our implementation in order to reflect this. So inside of our interface, we want to insert something called a forward class declaration. And this basically says, okay, inside of this interface, there's going to be a reference to some class. Just so you know, you don't have an error because this class exists. I created it. But I don't know what that class looks like. I just know it's called something like student. So we're going to say at class and then give the name of our class at the top of our interface. Inside of our implementation, we're going to want to import the header file associated with the class. And that's so that the implementation is aware of the capabilities of that class, whether it be its method or its properties. So this is just like import in Java or include in C, and that's basically just going to tell the class what this other class can do, where the forward class declaration just says this class exists, so don't worry about it. Oh, so by convention do we use lowercase? So this at class directive, this keyword, is going to be lowercase. But our actual class names will typically be uppercase. So just like in most other languages. So now some objects or classes that we may find useful as we proceed forward and that we'll see in our example. So first is NSString. So here are just some methods that you might find useful as you're working with NSString. We can get the length of a string. We can get substrings of our strings. To compare strings, we're going to want to use this isEqualToString method. And finally, just a really long method inside a string, string by replacing occurrences of string. That's string replacement in a lot of words. Now, we also have this NSMutable array. And so just like we saw arrays in C, which are fixed size, we have this mutable array, which is more like a Java array list that can be dynamically sized. So once we have a mutable array, we can get its size, we can see if it contains something, and we can also add objects and remove objects. So there also exists an NSArray class, of which NSMutableArray is a subclass because it's defining new behavior. So this NSArray doesn't have the ability to add new objects, but if we add this mutable, then we all of a sudden get all these methods that allow us to manipulate the array. Same deal with the NSMutableDictionary. There also exists an NSDictionary that you don't have the ability to dynamically modify. But we're defining a hash table or key value pairs or objects, as we saw in JavaScript, in which you can associate some value of any type with a key that's typically a string. So now, with all that in mind, let's walk through an example of creating a class and implementing some methods using these really useful collections. So here, I've started you off with our student class that we started to see in lecture, and our student class is really simple. So here, we've defined a new interface. It's called student. As usual, we're getting from NSObject, and we've defined a single instance variable called name. So this is a pointer to an NS string because these next step objects are always going to be pointers. And we've prefaced it with an underscore. So this is to distinguish this property down there with the actual instance variable. So now this is how we're going to define a property called name. So we've given it three attributes. The first is copy. So this says that whenever we assign a new value to this string name, we're going to copy that string object, so this object has its own copy. So if we later modify that other original string object, it won't affect the object, the instance name, instance variable name. Next, we have this non-atomic. This just says I want my access to be faster because I'm in a single-threaded application. And finally, read-write. So we want both getters and setters for this property. You don't have to include this read-write because it's already there by default, but that's what it would look like. Next, we're going to give the type. So we want a pointer to an NS string. And then finally, the name of our property, which is going to be name. Next, we've just defined one method, so init with name. So you'll notice that this just has one argument. So this first parameter is not named. We just give it a return type of an NS string. And we're going to call it new name, because this is going to be the new name for the student. So if we take a look at the implementation file, first we have this @synthesize. So this @synthesize, this first name without the underscore, refers to what we call the property. So you'll notice we call the property name. So we're going to synthesize on that. We're going to synthesize that name property, and that name property is going to refer to the instance variable underscore name. So whenever we modify this name property, we're going to be changing the value of this underscore name instance variable inside of our interface. So now we have getters and setters that we can access with the dot notation. So this is how we're going to define our initializer. Just like in Java, we always want to make sure to call super.onCreate. We want to make sure that we call the superclass init method. So this self is the new this. It's the same thing. It's going to refer to the current instance of the class. So we're setting self equal to the superclass constructor. And now we have this if self not equal to nil. So this just says, let's make sure that we had enough memory to create this object and that we're not trying to manipulate something weird and that we have a valid object. So just a little sanity check to make sure that we're OK. And now we're saying self.name equals new name. So because we specified copy on our property, this string object is going to be copied into this name. So we have a new copy of this string object. It has a reference count of 1. We haven't released or retained the original string object. We've just created a new one. And so finally, we're going to return self because we want to return the student object we just created. So that's our initializer. Our dealloc is in the way. So inside of dealloc, we want to release this name property. So to do that, we can just say self.name equals nil. And so this is going to, just like sending it a release message, this is going to decrement the reference count, which at this point is probably 0. I'm sorry, that makes no sense. So inside of dealloc, we want to remove it from memory. So when we set it equal to nil, that means it's going to be removed from memory. Then we want to call dealloc on the superclass. And so now we've released all of our properties. So once the object itself has been released, this student object, dealloc is called on the student object. So once the object itself is being freed, we also want to be freeing all of the properties inside of the object, because without the object anymore, we can't get at those properties. So this dealloc is being called when the reference count of the student object is 0. So now we want to make sure we release all of the properties of the student object. So we do that by setting them equal to nil, which is the same as releasing it, and that's going to decrement that reference count, and maybe we can deallocate that string. So this self.name equals nil is actually equivalent to saying name release. These two will do the same thing. So any questions on how our student class works? Yep?
Why do you have to check whether self is not nil?
So in C, there's this common notion of mallocing. And so after we malloc, it's really common to make sure we didn't get back null. So the reason we're checking this nil is to make sure that we had enough memory to create this object. And to make sure that, you know, we didn't get back an error or something. It's just... Right, so we set self equal to this super init. So this super init, or the super class, returns some value. And this returns nil, that means we're not working with an object, and so we can't try to set properties of nil, because that doesn't really make sense. So this is just kind of a sanity check to make sure that our object was created correctly before we try to do anything with its properties. Yeah?
In your deallocator, so maybe I'm confused, but I think in C++, if you do that, wouldn't you orphan the objects?
So in C++, wouldn't you orphan the object? So Objective-C memory management is a little different than C++. So at this point, dealloc is being called because our student object is 0. So in C++, we'd want to call free. In Objective-C, this equals nil. Now you notice nil is not null. Because this is C, we can also say null. So that would not be the same thing. Nil is a special value that when we set a property equal to nil, we're also going to call release. So this is a special behavior. It's not the same as in C++. We're handling memory a little differently. So if we set underscore name release, that's going to do the same thing as saying self.name equals nil.
And if you set it to nil, then you would have the same behavior where you'd orphan it.
Right. That if we set it to null, then we're not going to release it and it would be different. Those are different things. Exactly. So as you mentioned in lecture, referencing a value of nil is not going to crash. So let's say that for some reason we tried to access name later. Like we tried to say, I don't know, like self.name equals that. Now if we had said name release, so if we had said name release, if we had said this, then our app would actually crash because name has been released and it's gone. If, however, we set it to nil, we are actually just sending this message to nil. And it's perfectly okay to send messages to nil. So if we, you know, nil set name, whatever. So nil doesn't respond to this set name message, as Xcode is now so nicely telling me. But that's not going to crash your application. Because just because an object doesn't respond to something doesn't mean the whole thing is going to blow up. Whereas if you're trying to access memory that's not yours, that's when you're going to run into things where it blows up. Yeah, so what is this superclass? This superclass, as we said in our interface, is going to be NS object. And so this basically is something that we're going to want to do in all of our classes. So Java, actually, in any class we create, we're automatically extending Java lang object, where in Objective-C, we need to explicitly say that we're extending a next step object. And the reason we're calling this superclass is so that we can initialize a generic object before we try to do anything fancy with our object. So this is basically the design pattern for constructors and destructors in Objective-C. Yeah.
Sorry, if you have that new name that you're passing in, just change that to name.
Yep.
I mean, I know, for example, like, in Java,
So why did I call it new name instead of name? Only because we inside of this class, I already have a property called name, so I just want to make it confusing. I could call it name if I wanted to. I could not call it underscore name, because that would be really confusing because I have an instance variable called underscore name. And so this new name is just basically to distinguish the fact that I'm working with the parameter and rather than the property called name. I could just say name here and then just say self.name equals name. That would work fine. So this.name is going to be a little different. So if we were to say this.name, then or the equivalent being self.name now, that's going to refer to the property. So whenever we say this in Java and we say this.something, that something is always going to be something defined in the class itself, whether it be a member variable or a method. Where in this case, this is just going to be an argument to the method, and so this wouldn't be accessible in Java under this dot. It would just have to be that name of the variable. Does that make sense? So if this were Java, and we pass an argument to a method, and we call that argument foo, inside of the method, we would not say this dot foo. We would just say foo. The this dot is going to refer to like member variables in our class. So if I said class like private string, then that would be this dot. Yep.
Could you go again over again? Sorry.
Yep.
It's copy and what that signifies for the code in the dot m file.
Sure. So copy. I could also say retain here. There'll be slightly different behavior, which I can show you in just a moment if we have time. But copy is going to basically create a new object and copy the value of the previous object into it. So inside of this init function, we have this string called newName. So this newName is already a string that's been allocated somewhere else. So if we say copy, we're going to basically, in this little self.name equals newName, we're going to allocate a new string. We're going to copy the value of this newName string into that newName string without ever modifying newName. If we had just said retain, we're not going to create a new string. We're just going to send a retain message to newName and increment its message count. So if we later modified whatever string or whatever object this has been allocated to, the value inside of this class would also be modified if we had said retain. Because we're saying copy, if we later modify this value, then it's not going to be modified. The value inside of the class is not going to be modified. Yep. So how do we know what's going on? You really do have to look at the header file, and that's going to define the behavior. You could also define your own getters and setters, and that might make it a little more clear for you, but that's a lot more typing. It's really right here where you're going to define the semantics of how things are going to be assigned and retrieved. Yep? Yes, so when we call init with name, this has to be called on an already allocated object. So we want to say alloc init with name, and that's what's going to produce what we want.
So when you call super init, it always returns that already allocated object?
Yes, so when we call super init, that means that we're already allocated. We don't have to call allocate ourselves. That's just going to init some generic object, and then from that generic object, we can assign the properties that pertain to this specific object. Yes, so superinit is going to return kind of a blank NS object. So let's take a look at an example of what that would look like. So let's create a new class. So we have already a class called student. So let's create a new class that will represent a TF. So we're going to right click or control click on this section app folder, so we can add some new files to that folder. We're going to click New File. We want a new Objective-C class. We want it to be a subclass of a generic NS object, and we're just going to call this TF. And so let's save that. So now we have a blank TF file. So let's give this TF some properties. So let's give him a name, so NS string name. Now we want the TF to have some students, so let's say NS immutable array of students. He also wants to have a gradebook, so let's give it an NS dictionary, mutable dictionary, of grades. And so now we can define properties for these instance variables. So let's say at property, so we want to always say non-atomic because we're just single-threaded right now. So non-atomic retain our string. And we're going to do the same for both the students and the grades. So this is going to be an NS mutable array of students. And this is going to be an NS mutable dictionary of grades. So now Xcode is giving us three warnings because we only have half of our property. We have these properties defined, but we don't synthesize them anywhere. So now we want to synthesize them inside of our .m file. So we're going to say inside of our implementation, we want to at synthesize. So we had three properties. So we want to synthesize the name, and that's going to point to the name field. Notice the autocomplete for us. We want students to point to the students. And we want grades to be the grades. So now we've synthesized all of our properties, and we're going to have getters and setters for them. So let's just create our init method. So we want to, we're going to say init with name. So this first parameter is not going to have a keyword. It's just going to be the name because we're saying init with name. And so we're going to say ns string. So new name, and then we also want to give some students. So let's say students, and let's say ns mutable array of some new students. And that'll be the signature for our init. So to give the TF some capabilities, let's go ahead and define a grade method, so to assign grades to each of these students, as well as a way to show us the grades. So we'll say output grades. And so for now, these will be the three methods inside of our TF class. So now we need to implement each of these inside of our implementation file. So let's go ahead and copy these. So now we want to provide definitions for each of these methods. So first, we're going to follow the same pattern we just saw. We're going to say self is going to be super init. We want to make sure that we have a valid object. So we'll make sure it's not nil. And now we want to use these properties to assign values. So we're going to say self.name is going to be the new name. And the students are going to be the students. Now we also want to make sure that we initialize our grades array, because you'll notice that, or our grades dictionary, because you'll notice we're not passing it anything. So if we don't call alloc in init on this property, it's just going to be nil and it's not going to respond to anything. So we want to say self.grades is a new NS mutable dictionary. We're going to alloc and we're going to init. So after all that's done, we want to return the object we just created. So that's our simple constructor. So with that constructor, we can start using our TF object. So inside of main.m, I've defined these two students. So now, let's create a new mutable array of these students. So let's say we want a new mutable array. We'll call it students. So first, we want to allocate a new object. So we want ns mutable array alloc. And now we want to initialize this array. Now there's a special method inside of ns mutable array that will allow us to give it some values at the start instead of calling add object a bunch of times. So we can give it values like that. there's a special convention where the last element of this list has to be nil so that this initializer knows when to stop adding objects. And so now we've just created a new array of students that have these values inside of it. So now we can create a new TF object. So let's go ahead and call Alec. And now we can initialize . So the reason autocomplete isn't working, autocomplete is not working is generally a hint that you've forgotten something. In this case, we need to make sure that we import this tf.h file that we've defined. So now, autocomplete's working again. We can give us a name. Now, what's really cool about autocomplete is you'll see that this NS mutable array is in this little blue circle thing. So if we actually hit tab, we can tab over to that parameter, and now we can start giving it values, so in this case, students. So now we've now initialized an array, and it has those students, and we've created a TF, and we've given that array of students to the TF. So before we do anything else, we want to make sure that we implement our dealloc method, because without it, we're going to be having lots of memory leaks. So we're going to say void dealloc. Now inside of this, we want to release all of our properties. So to do that, we're going to set their values to nil. And finally, we're going to call the superclass so we deallocate the object itself. I probably have a typo somewhere. I spell something wrong. Yep. Oh yeah, I'm just trying. What's that? Oh, did I? Okay. Okay, no build errors, slight typo. We're good to go. So now with this TF, we want to do two things. Let's call this grade method we just defined, and then let's output the grades. So we're going to say, Tommy, we want to send it a message to grade. So we're going to call a method on this object. And now let's output those grades. So in the interest of time, I'm just going to copy over this grade method that I've already written and that you'll find in your section handout. And so what this grade method is going to do is, after careful consideration, assign a grade to each student. So we need to make sure that because we're using student objects that we import, or we're not using students, but we're using a special function that's defined in the C standard library, this srand and this time. So we just need to make sure we import the appropriate header from C where this is defined for us. And we're also using student objects because we know that this array of students contains student objects, so we also need to import this student.h. Because we're in an implementation file, we don't need this forward class declaration, we just need the header. And so we can get rid of this. So here, we're just calculating a random number, and we're adding that number to our gradebook. So we have a key of the student's name, and the value associated with that key is going to be the integer value of their grade. So now in output grades, we want to iterate through this array of grades and output the student's name and then their grade. So to do that, we're going to use a special for loop syntax to Objective-C. It's kind of like we saw in JavaScript, where we can use this for in syntax. So we want to say for some grade inside of self.grades. So self.grades is going to be a dictionary with keys and values. So the keys are going to be students. So if we say ID student, we know that the key is going to be some string. So this student, as we're iterating through the loop, is going to be the NS string of the student, or the key, which is the student's name. So if we say NS log, and so now we're going to use these special replacement characters. So we're going to use 2% ats, because we want to output two objects. So the first is pretty simple. It's just the student's name. So as I mentioned, because the keys are strings, the student value is just going to be the NS string. So we need to get the string associated with the student. So to do that, we're going to send a message to this NS dictionary, or self.grades. So now to get the value, which is an object associated with the key, we're going to send the message object for key, and we need to give it the key. So in this case, that's just student. And we call that method. And now we are going to iterate through all of the students, and we're just going to output their grades. So any question on either of these methods before we get into what these property retain and copy things do? OK, so if we run this, we're going to output the students' grades, which have been randomly assigned. So if I run this again, there'll be different values than 1 and 0. Now they're 2 and 1. So let's take a look at what these properties are actually doing. So let's, inside of our main, let's create a third student. So after we've initialized our TF, we've given it this student's array. So right now, we're just retaining. So we're going to be using this NS mutable array students as the mutable array contained in our object. So if we create a new student, so let's just call him Tim. So we create a new student, and we now want to add him to this array. So we're going to say students, add object, and now we're going to say Tim. So this object is created after we've already passed the students array to the TF object. So remember that I have declared this as retain. So let's run this program and see what happens. So you'll notice that a grade has actually been assigned to the student we just created, even though we passed that array before that student was added to it. So we're actually still referencing this same exact variable in memory. If, however, we remove this retain and change it to copy, recall we're going to be copying a new value of the array. So our object will have its own copy of the student's array, and we run it, we no longer assign a grade to that third student, because the array was copied to this new object when it was created, so any modifications to this other student's array will not be reflected in the class. Where if we retain, it's basically pointing to it, and any modifications will be reflected in the class. So any questions on that? Hopefully that clears up retain and copy a little bit. Yeah?
So what exact line, I mean, we see where Tim is allocated. What exact line are you saying, you know, is the difference between the array not getting Tim to join?
So you'll see here that when we allocate the TF, we're passing this array. So it currently has two objects, right? So the TF, this TF object now has an array with two objects.
And that object is called at that point?
So that object is now a property of our TF object, which is going to be called students. So this is just an NS mutable array that we've called students, and its property is called students. So if I say copy, when the TF is initialized and we set this value of students, Objective-C is creating a new array and assigning it to this object. So if we modify this original array, we're not modifying the copy that TF has, we're modifying this local copy in main. So the copy in TF is not going to be changed. If, however, we're simply retaining it, then the copy and TF will be changed because that object does not have its own copy. It's basically using this exact mutable array instead of having its own copy. So any changes to this array, because the TF object is using this array, will also be reflected in the property of the object. Yep?
So is it fair to say the student's add object Tim is where a new copy is being made? It doesn't touch the one that the Tommy TF had.
So the new copy is being made inside of this constructor, because that's where we say self.students equals new students. So that's where the copying is going on, inside this line right here, the init with name. So at this point, a copy is made of this array. So any modifications won't be reflected because we have a new copy of it. Any other questions? Or feel free to talk to me afterwards if this is still kind of an unclear concept. But we will be going into properties and their getters and setters more in the next lecture. But if not, good luck finishing up NPuzzle. There are office hours right now across the hall in Boylston 108. And I will see you next week. Oh, not NPuzzle. Student's choice. My students, good luck finishing your student's choice.